Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're getting ready for a big Green Bay Packers season opener against the Seattle Seahawks on Thursday for the NFL's opening game. To do that, to preview the game, we have joining us on the line this morning, as we do every Wednesday here at Cheesehead TV, Nathan Yockey of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing this morning?
Hey, Brian, I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Nathan, it's been a week since we've had you on, and we haven't had a chance to talk about the final cuts of the Green Bay Packers. So before we get into this big matchup that's happening on Thursday, just a couple questions to ask you about kind of the makeup of the Packers roster. There was a lot of discussion about whether the Packers should keep either Dimitri Goodson or Jamal Roll as kind of the team's sixth cornerback. Can you compare the two based upon their play this preseason?
Sure. In coverage, I would say Goodson outplayed Roll. While Goodson allowed a high yards per catch of 18.7, he also allowed a very low catch rate of 54.5, and he had two passes defended. So he did a decent job there, where Roll allowed a higher catch rate at 64.3, lower yards per catch at 11.9, only one pass defended, and then also Roll had a missed tackle, which didn't help him there. What Roll did do a good job of is pass rushing. He was S rushed the passer six times, and in that he had a sack and two hurries, while Goodson never rushed the passer, so it's kind of hard to compare there. But Roll did do a nice job there. And then in special teams, the only thing that was noteworthy out of either player was Roll was penalized twice, which of course isn't good. So overall, I would say Goodson outplayed Roll. So it wasn't too surprising to see who won the job there.
There you go. Well, most people, I think, were promoting Jamal Roll for making the Packers team. Nathan Yockey states the case for Dimitri Goodson, who looks to be the better coverage player, at least. I would agree with that. I think Jamal Roll is the more versatile player who can play the slot and is a little bit tougher, maybe. But that doesn't mean there isn't a spot for Dimitri Goodson on this team as well. Nathan, I think it's going to be the last time we're going to talk about Carl Bradford for a while. But, you know, again, seeing as this is kind of a wrap-up of the last preseason game, the Packers made the switch. And in the last game, Carl Bradford played inside linebacker for the first time. How did he look in his debut at the position?
He looked like someone who was just getting to know the inside linebacker position. It wasn't his finest game there. In the run game, he did have a few nice plays that led to run stops, but far too often offensive linemen or tight end were getting to the second level and successfully blocking him, which helped lead the Chiefs to average 4.9 yards per carry in that game. He also had some struggles in coverage as well. He allowed four completions for 10 yards, 7 yards, 7 yards, and then a 2-yard touchdown. But on the bright side, he did have a nice tackle on a kickoff, so hopefully special teams is the only place that we see him play this year anyway, and he did do a nice job there. So that's how Bradford played in his first game at inside linebacker.
Yeah, I think the Packers have enough depth at inside linebacker that they won't really be using Carl Bradford anytime soon. Kind of getting into a transition here that from the roster makeup to the Thursday's game, decisions that are going to have an impact here. The Packers decided to go with Matt Flynn over Scott Tolzien, although they kept both quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks, which was a kind of a decision in itself. But Nathan, are the Packers making the right choice in choosing Matt Flynn over Scott Tolzien as the number two quarterback?
Based on everything that I've seen, I would not have made that decision. In the preseason, Tolzien, we gave him a plus 6.6 overall grade here at Pro Football Focus, where Flynn had a negative 5.1 overall grade. So there was a nice difference there. On passes that were in the air for 10 yards or more, Tolzien completed an impressive 17 of 23 of those passes for 297 yards and 3 touchdowns, while on those same passes, plays that were in balls that were in the air for 10 yards or more. Flynn only completed 5 of 15 passes for 88 yards and a touchdown. So Tolzien far outplayed Flynn on some of those more difficult passes. And then even last year, Tolzien outplayed Flynn, although on different sample sizes. So, of course, I'm not there at practice every day to see what's going on there or know how much more confident the Packers feel with Flynn rather than Tolzien. But just based on everything I've seen on the field, both this preseason and last year, I would have gone with Tolzien in a landslide.
Those are some pretty telling statistics you just cited about the balls in the air more than 10 yards. I do happen to wonder if maybe the Packers are just going with the veteran, the more experienced guy for the interim, seeing as it's playing against his former team in the Seahawks, where he might know some tendencies about the defense or something like that, and then eventually go to Scott Tolzien down the road. We'll find out. How did Corey Linsley look, the Packers' new starting center, the rookie? How did he look in his final preseason game as the starter at center and kind of the preseason as a whole, Nathan?
He really didn't do too much noteworthy against Kansas City. He had a nice block of James Michael Johnson on the second level. And then there was also one play where he was stood up at the line of scrimmage by Kyle Love. But on the most part, what he did on the play didn't have a huge impact. On the preseason as a whole, he had the fifth highest run block grade for all of our centers, which is, of course, very good. He allowed one pressure in the game against St. Louis, which resulted in him being above average as a pass blocker this preseason, although plenty of centers went this preseason without allowing a single pressure. But still, very good against the run overall, and then pretty good against the pass. So, overall, he did a nice job this preseason.
Sticking with the offensive line here, the last time the Packers played at Seattle in a regular season football game, Brian Bulaga had arguably his worst game of his career. That was that game where the Packers gave up 8 sacks in one half to the Seahawks, the Fail Mary game. But, you know, for the offensive line, the first half was probably more notable. How has Brian Bulaga looked over the course of this preseason as he comes back from his torn ACL last year? How's he looking, Nathan?
First off, and most importantly, he's been perfect in pass protection, hasn't allowed a single sack, a single hit, a single hurry. And he is one of 12 offensive tackles in the NFL, at least 30 or more pass blocks. So that's definitely good to see. He has had his troubles in the run game, especially was against Khalil Mack in the Raiders game. He a lot on plays where Bulaga was blocking Mack. Mack was able to still get a tackle for a loss and a tackle for a short gain in that game. So even if Bulaga doesn't improve much in his run blocking this season, it should still be a step up from what they had last year in Don Barclay. And then, of course, seeing his pass protection that well is a good sign.
We're talking to Nathan Jahnke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, Latroy Guyon finally saw some time at nose tackle in the final preseason game and has been named the Packers starter at Seattle. How did he do in his first game back from injury? He missed so much time with a hamstring injury. How did he look?
He only played 9 snaps in this game. 8 of them came on pass plays, with just one coming against the run. On that one play against the run, he did do a good job of standing up the center. But on his 8 plays against the pass, he wasn't able to come up with any pressure. So in this game and future games, I expect him to be playing more against the run than he will against the pass. So on that sample size of one run play, he looked good. But again, it's just a sample size of one play there.
Yeah, certainly we don't have a whole lot to go on, but Latroy Guyon's going to be relied upon pretty heavily as we go from the preseason to the regular season here. Nathan, I think people in Wisconsin pay pretty close attention to Russell Wilson as a former Badgers player and a key player the Packers will face on Thursday. To me, Russell Wilson seems to keep getting better ever since he's entered the NFL. Is he becoming one of the league's elite quarterbacks?
Yeah, I would say he's been knocking on the door of that ever since about October of his rookie year. Without counting the playoffs, he's ranked our 8th best quarterback, just looking at passing each of these last 2 years. And then when you look at running, he's been one of the top two running quarterbacks each of the past 2 years. So that helps his rank as well, which brings him to about a top five quarterback each year. And the playoffs only help his rank there since he has played well, especially last year. And I think the only thing really holding him back from being unanimously considered a top five quarterback by everyone is Seattle simply runs the ball too much. And they also had a below average pass blocking line last year, which hurt Wilson's stats a little bit. But this preseason, he's looked incredible. He's completed 78.6% of his passes, and that doesn't even account for things like two of those passes being thrown away. So I'm guessing this year he'll continue being amongst the best, and in a few years from now, when guys like Manning, Brady, and Brees end up retiring, he could very well be one of the top two quarterbacks of the league for a while.
Yeah, that's a good point too about the Seahawks offensive line. Something that I don't think's been really focused on too much in this game as people are getting ready to preview it. I think that's one of the weakest points of the Seahawks team is that offensive line that is simply, other than center Max Unger, I'm not sure is really all that impressive. And finally, Nathan, before we let you go here, the Seahawks were one of the best defenses in the NFL last season. Is there any reason to believe they'll regress, kind of making it easier on the Packers? Any chance of that happening?
From a statistical outlook, they should regress this year. I graduated in actuary science when I was in college, so I definitely look at things at a statistical
Regress
standpoint. And
toward the mean,
typically,
huh?
whenever any sport someone does so well, their pass defense was one of the best ever last year. We typically always see that regress at least some. So I would expect the Seahawks defense to still be possibly the league's best, among the league's best, but probably not quite as good as they were last year. Another thing they have going against them is, my guess is as good as anyone's, is how much the referees will really be calling these defensive penalties like they were early in the preseason. But if they're calling them a lot, that certainly could hurt them as well. But in terms of players added and players lost, they lost a couple defensive linemen as well as cornerbacks this offseason. And they on the defensive line, they have some young players to step up, as well as they added Kevin Williams from the Vikings. So defensive line, they should be fine. But if they ever see an injury to that secondary, that could very well hurt them, which is unlikely to help them in this upcoming game, but could happen at some point during the season.
Well, Nathan, we appreciate you helping us preview the game here, and this is the last time for 3 weeks we'll be talking to you. So we'll see you down the road later in September, but appreciate your insight, and we'll talk to you again.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, take care. Nathan Jahnke at ProFootballFocus.com joining us here at Railbird Central. This is as good a time as any to note Friday's episode will be the last episode of Railbird Central for like 2+ weeks as I go on vacation. Actually, we'll be out of the country. I have no way of doing Railbird Central for quite a while. So about 2 weeks. We'll be on hiatus, I guess, here at Railbird Central. We'll be back on Friday. We'll be wrapping up the Seahawks game. After that, it'll be a while again. So don't worry, they'll have you covered here at Cheesehead TV's Packer Transplants. And the blog will be going as usual, so we'll have plenty of Packers content for you. Just no Railbird Central after Friday's show. Hopefully, we'll have one last chance to celebrate here and have a good show 48 hours from now. That's what that fingers crossed that we're celebrating a Packers win 48 hours on this episode with our next guest. By the way, our monthly guest Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog as he joins us the first Friday of every month here at Railbird Central. So we'll have him the first Friday of every month, September, October, November, December, as we'll be talking to Scott. But anyway, let's continue on here, get rid of the housekeeping duties here. Continuing to preview this Packers Seahawks opening NFL kickoff game on Thursday night, national television. No matter where you are in the nation, you should be able to see this as long as you have a TV set and you're within signal distance of a NBC affiliate somewhere. But you should be able to see this game anywhere in the nation. You know, one of the things that I'm really interested in seeing, something that we didn't talk about with Nathan a whole lot, but that I want to touch on here, and some things that I will touch on in my game preview here at the blog at Cheesehead TV, but just expounding on some thoughts here. One of the biggest things I'm looking forward to seeing is the Packers' defense this season and how much it changes. We have talked plenty about the changes on the Packers' defense and you know, how they got Julius Peppers in free agency. I mean, we're talking months here. We've kind of been hinting at this and discussing it and whatever. But finally, we see the defense unveiled on this upcoming Thursday, tomorrow, for the first time in a regular season game. Yeah, we saw glimpses of it during the preseason. But as you know, all NFL teams are rather vanilla in the preseason. I don't think the Packers were tipping their hat at all as to, you know, what kind of blitzes or how they plan to use their personnel or anything like that. The Packers gave Julius Peppers, what was it, $23, $24 million over the course of a three-year contract in the offseason. I believe $7.5 million guaranteed. The Packers didn't give Julius Peppers all that money to run the exact same schemes they've been running for the past few years that more or less haven't been working. Or at least let's say, you know, since Super Bowl XLV when the Packers beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. But anyway here, you know, Julius Peppers, I'm so excited to see how he's utilized because I think he's going to be all over the field. And he kind of was in the preseason in a way. You know, he's going to line up on the left side, the right side. He's going to be in a 2-point stance. He's going to be in a 3-point stance. He's going to rush the passer. Every blue moon, he'll drop into coverage. And then there's the opportunity that we haven't seen a whole lot here yet, but I'm wondering how much they use him as an interior pass rusher, kind of a defensive tackle in the box, you know, inside the tackle box. That was something the Packers didn't really do in the preseason. And I don't expect Julius Peppers is going to do that a lot, but I think they're going to do that from time to time, occasion to occasion, be using him as a pass rusher, you know, hand in the dirt, in the tackle box, getting after the quarterback. I think we're going to see that from Julius Peppers. But, I mean, all these different ways they can use him, that's why they brought him over. That's why they gave him the big contract. And it's going to make such a huge impact, I believe, on the Packers' defense. Based upon the limited action we saw from Julius Peppers in the preseason, I don't think his career is over yet. Yeah, people are going to, you know, argue about the, you know, him being 34 years old and Julius Peppers being past his prime. I just don't think he's there quite yet. I think he's going to still be very effective, even at 34 years old. And he's going to take pressure off Clay Matthews. He's going to take pressure off Mike Daniels and vice versa. They'll be taking pressure off Julius Peppers. And not just them, you know, it's Mike Neal, it's A.J. Hawk coming on a blitz, it's Dayton Jones, you know, all these guys, you can't account for all of them. I'm so excited to see how this Packers defense does, because as we did allude to with Nathan Yonke, I think if there's a weakness on the Seattle Seahawks team, I think it is their offensive line, which is nothing to write home about, really. They lose Breno Giacomini, the former Packers right tackle, in the offseason. Yeah, Breno wasn't a Pro Bowler to begin with, but he was part of that team that, was a Super Bowl champion last year. They got Max Unger at center, who's a good center. But, I mean, this is not an elite offensive line. The Packers can get pressure on this offensive line, putting pressure on Russell Wilson. They should be able to do that rather liberally on Thursday evening at CenturyLink Stadium. They should be able to do that, I think. You know, I'm so excited to see, how this defense is going to be different from last year, because there's been so many changes to it. And, you know, not just talking about Julius Peppers here, but, you know, the Packers decide to go away from the big body in the offseason, the big, huge defensive lineman, Ryan Pickett and Johnny Jolly, even with the depth issues on the defensive line, the carrying only five defensive linemen on the roster, they still haven't called. Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe they've called, but they still haven't signed Pickett or Jolly, and they don't appear to, even with the injuries to B.J. Raji and Kyree Thornton both being placed on injured reserve. You know, and B.J. Raji, too, he was still one of the few big players the Packers had left, the 330-plus pounder. Even with him gone, the Packers, I guess, have gotten even smaller, and, you know, they're going to be relying on Mike Daniels, who's only, you know, just a couple pounds over 300 pounds, Dayton Jones. These guys are going to be playing a heavy, heavy amount of snaps. I mean, Dayton Jones and Mike Daniels, those are going to be three-down players a lot. Not to say there's not going to be some rotation on the defensive line. There will be. And, you know, LaTroy Guyon's going to be part of it. Josh Boyd's going to be part of it. You know, even as an undrafted rookie, I think Mike Pinnell's going to be out there and playing week one. I don't know if he's going to be playing a ton, but they're going to utilize him, I believe. And his, you know, he is the big body. And, you know, maybe it's a situation where Mike Pinnell's out there on goal line situations, and it's third and one, and, you know, they got to stuff the run at midfield or whatever it is. It's Mike Pinnell's going to get a little bit of time. But, you know, this goes to the larger point of the Packers' defense being different this year. And so it's happened up front with the defensive line, with Julius Peppers, and how that's all impacted. And then in the back end as well, you know, I'm really particularly interested in how the safety position is different this year. The Packers are looking to stick with Morgan Burnett as one of the incumbent starters. And, well, I think they've picked the better out of the two between him and M.D. Jennings. But it appears as if Micah Hyde will be the starter opposite him after making the conversion in the offseason from the cornerback position. Everything we saw in the preseason, Micah Hyde looks like a natural at safety. I mean, maybe the regular season will be something different, but I haven't gotten any indications yet that he can't handle it. In those occasions where Micah Hyde has to drop down and cover a slot receiver, that's not going to be a whole lot different than what he was doing at the corner, you know, as a slot cornerback anyway. And I wonder how much Clinton Dix, how much action he'll be getting in his first year as a rookie. Will he be brought in? It doesn't look like he's going to start, but will he be brought in sub packages and the nickel? Well, probably not the nickel, but maybe the dime. Clinton Dix is out there. Regardless of what combination they use, I mean, the Packers' safety position is leaps and bounds better than it was a year ago, when you had M.D. Jennings and Jerron McMillan in the mix, and Chris Banjo. And nothing against Chris Banjo, he's still on the Packers practice squad. But I think the Packers have upgraded the position with Burnett, Hyde, Clinton Dix, and then Sean Richardson. It's too bad for Sean Richardson. I think he's probably an injury away from getting any time on the defensive side of the football, despite how well he's played. I don't know. Maybe they'll figure out a way to get him in there on a rotational basis too, maybe. I think Sean Richardson's looking at times mostly on special teams. But anyway, the situation at safety is so much better, and it's only going to improve the secondary play as a whole. Let's hope to God the Packers aren't getting shut out at the safety position in interceptions once again, as they were last season. Not a single interception from a safety a year ago from the Green Bay Packers. That's got to change. Hopefully it changes week one against the Seattle Seahawks. So, those are some of the big things I'm looking for on the defensive side of the football when the Seahawks have the ball from the Packers, defensive standpoint. On the offensive side, I think, so much is being made about Corey Linsley making his first start at center, and rightfully so. J.C. Treader, which I suppose I can get into here, by the way. Yesterday, the report from Rob Domofsky of ESPN.com, Packers expected to place center J.C. Treader on short-term injured reserve, although it didn't happen officially yesterday. In checking the league's transaction wire, Treader was not listed, although the report is they're expected to do so. So J.C. Treader, if indeed that does happen, Treader will be out until at least week 8. Rules state you can't practice until after 6 weeks. You can't play until after 8 weeks. It, just by coincidence, the Packers have their bye week 9 of the season. So technically, Treader, if this does all come true, he won't be playing in a game at the earliest until week 10. Now, I mean, if this is indeed a his injury is going to be quite a while and he's nowhere near returning, I think this is a good thing. Some people have argued, why would you waste this short-term injury to return on Treader when perhaps another injury happens down the road that's maybe more severe. Treader's is expected to come back. The Packers got to have 7 game day inactives anyway. Why isn't he just, remain one of those until he gets healthy? I think as long as they think he's going to be out for several weeks, multiple weeks, I have no problem with the Packers doing this because, you're waiting otherwise for an injury that may or may not happen. And you're talking about an injury that fits the criteria of being severe enough to be out several weeks, but not be enough to be out the entire season. You just don't know whether or not that's going to happen to Randall Cobb like it happened last year, where he comes back in time for the last game of the year. I think you gotta put J.C. Treader on this short-term IR. I can't blame the Packers if they do that. But it has opened the door, at least for the time being, for Corey Linsley to be the starting center for the season opener at Seattle, as well as however long J.C. Treader is out. And who knows, if Corey Linsley plays good enough, it could be his to keep. I think a lot of people have started to speculate that already. With Linsley getting the start, maybe he just keeps the job indefinitely. But I that might be a little presumptuous at this point. J.C. Treader is looking to be, snake bitten with his injuries. He had the broken ankle last year. He's got the broken knee this year. It's unfortunate because sometimes I don't think you can prevent broken bones, whereas you can prevent pulled hamstrings with proper nutrition and training and all those kind of things, or minimize the risk of it at least. J.C. Treader's maybe simply a product of bad luck. But regardless, Corey Linsley making his first NFL regular season start in a meaningful game in a hostile environment at CenturyLink Stadium in Seattle, home of the 12th man, which I think some people think is overrated, the whole 12th man thing. But I'll tell you what, it's gotten so much attention in the past year because the Seahawks have been Super Bowl champions. The 12th man thing goes back decades. I mean, that's been a thing in Seattle and something that they've been proud of for a long, long time. It just hasn't been until they won a Super Bowl where it's really gotten a lot of attention and things like that, I think. It is a loud stadium for being an outdoor stadium at Seattle. I wish they had kind of some way to measure. It would it be that hard to take some sort of loudness measurement device and have an objective measure of all the loudest stadiums in the country? So then you know exactly, because right now it's all kind of like speculation, isn't it? People just think it's a loud stadium, so it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Isn't there some objective way to measure these things and rank them, loudest to least loudest? There's got to be a way to do that. I've never seen that before. Can't some somebody like ESPN who has plenty of cash to do, can't they go do that? We'll see. But Corey Linsley, the Packers passed on having Linsley work with Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, the face of the franchise, having them work together in the final preseason game. They had the opportunity to do so. J.C. Treader was injured in the third preseason game. So Linsley, they knew he was going to start the preseason finale. The Packers go and hold out like 18 starters out of the preseason finale, just as they don't want him to get hurt. They want to keep him fresh for the season opener. They do let Linsley, play though. He didn't play a ton, but they figure, oh, he's a rookie, he needs the work. But they didn't give him any time with Aaron Rodgers, so I don't know. All it's going to take is one fumbled snap for that fact to be pointed out, during Thursday's game. If there's just one fumbled exchange, one bad snap, people are going to point out they didn't work together in the final preseason game. Could this have been prevented? Could they have fixed out any, errors in the final, the last exhibition game instead of the first meaningful game? Maybe that's just hindsight too, if indeed it were to happen. And again, just speculation. I mean, it hasn't happened, and who knows? Maybe it just goes swimmingly. Maybe Corey Linsley looks as good as he has in the preseason when, ProFootballFocus.com had him high rated as one of the best centers in the league in preseason action. The thing on Corey Linsley is he's presumably a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. There's so much attention on Aaron Rodgers in the passing game. Maybe the Packers really rely upon, Eddie Lacy in the run game, maybe more than you think. This season opener, that really wouldn't be that bad of an idea, would it? I mean, considering as good as Eddie Lacy is, considering you've got Brian Bulaga back there at right tackle, an upgrade over Don Barclay from last year, maybe the Packers really can run over the Seahawks defense. Not to say that Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be counted upon in the passing game, but maybe the Packers really do run the ball down their throat, perhaps. Maybe unexpectedly more than people think is going to happen. I could see that happening. I really could. We'll see how it all plays out, because we don't have long to wait here. So that'll do it for this morning's episode of Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. Thank you everybody so much for helping us preview the Packers season opener Thursday on NBC on national television. And thanks to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us here on the show. That'll be it for today. Like I said, we'll be back one more time on Friday. Usually every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV for the most frequently broadcasted Packers podcast on the entire internet. You won't find a Packers podcast that airs more frequently than Railbird Central. So thank you everybody so much, our listeners, for joining me. You guys are the people that make this work, and the reason we've been able to air 400 plus episodes of Railbird Central now. So thank you. We'll see you again on Friday for our wrap up when we talk to Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. But we'll see you, folks. I leave you today with a song called Rosie by the String Cheese Incident on Cy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.